5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Sabro set, it's go!
Hello and welcome to Somerset Is Go with Patrick Jordan and Eddie Gaines. Today's topic is volunteering, using your skills to serve. And although voluntary work can be unpaid, or usually is unpaid in fact, it can still be extremely rewarding and helps make a positive difference, both to our own lives and to the lives of others. Now later we're going to be joined in the studio by Lisa White-Jones from the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development. But beforehand we took the time to interview Pauline Holmshaw. Now, Pauline is involved with SAFA, which is the Armed Forces charity, helping people who are ex-forces with any issues or problems they may have. We caught up with Pauline this morning, and this is what she told us. We have with us Pauline Holmshaw in the studio, a regular contributor, of course, to Ten Radio and host of The Community Show. But Pauline is also a volunteer for SAFA. Now, could you explain what that is to us, Pauline?
Thanks, Patrick. The SAFA, which is the acronym for the full name of the charity, stands for the Soldiers, Sailors, Airmen and Families Association. A really long-winded title, so we shove it down into its initials. But SAFA has been going for 125 years this year, and its aim always has been and always will be is to help service and ex-service people and their families when they need us. And so we are there, we've been there from the beginning, we'll be there at the very end. One day's service is all it takes to be eligible for help from SAFA.
And that's a great service you're providing there. What kind of examples of things do you do?
The basis of volunteer caseworkers in the UK, of which there are about 7,000, is casework. And caseworkers are people who, after training, can visit people in their homes who have a service connection or are a spouse or a dependent to find out what the problem is, to go and discuss with them the situation, whether that be we're meeting a war veteran who's now got very impaired mobility, so they're looking for some sort of electrically powered vehicle or wheelchair. It could be a young mum who's in a situation where a divorce has occurred, she's had to come home with the children, nowhere to live, eventually perhaps might get a housing association property but has no furniture, no carpets, so we can help. And that's actually the crux of what our caseworking volunteers love doing, because you actually go into someone's home, you on their invitation and generally with reference from social workers from the social services department of the county, and you're there as a listening ear to try and find out where the help is needed. Then we go away as caseworkers, we do all the detective work to find out where, generally it comes down to money, where we can get the money to find the bit of kit or the pension or the electrically powered vehicle to help those people, and at the end give it to them. And that is the whole very neat job that casework involves. You're not just a part of a cog, you do the whole case, and the satisfaction that our volunteers get from that is absolutely tremendous, because you're actually working as a sort of detective. Sometimes it might be that you might have to go to 5 or 6 or 7 different charitable or regimental associations to get sufficient money to solve the need, gather all that together, which takes a lot of time and admin, and then solve the problem.
And so it sounds quite an involved and quite an interesting role, this. How did you get involved and what kind of training did you need to do?
I got involved inevitably, like you do, at lunch somewhere, and somebody said when we were newly moved to Somerset, oh, you've got nothing to do, why don't you get involved with SAFA? You know, this is sort of frequently how you know, the direct approach, isn't it? So it was simply that. And The training with SAFA initially is a 3-day very intensive caseworkers course, which is either at our central office in London or in regional centres if it's more convenient for us to go to Bristol or Plymouth in the West Country. And the training is ongoing. So at national level, you can go out for courses that our central office runs all the time on different areas of interest. You can have treasurer's courses, fundraising courses, publicity officers courses. And then in our county levels, we have 2 days training a year, which can involve anything from updates on benefits from work and pensions agencies to people coming to talk to us from Combat Stress or different charities who are comparing our work.
So I'd imagine really in this role you're actually learning a huge number of different bits of information, different skills, different techniques, all those kind of things.
You are, and some of our caseworkers, and to just explain our complicated system, sure. And each charity works differently, doesn't it? But our county, our Somerset County, is called a branch, and in that we've got 5 divisions, which roughly correspond with the district council areas, because that makes sense, because if we're dealing with social services and social workers, in our case here, based in, say, Wellington or Taunton, it just makes logical sense to deal with someone on your doorstep. And so the areas roughly correlate to the district councils. Each of those divisions has a divisional secretary who, as it were, manages or runs the volunteer caseworkers, all voluntary. And he particularly, and it's he, she particularly, are really brilliant people. The divisional secretaries, I think, in our organisation work the hardest of all of us because they receive all the information and then they put out the cases to each of the caseworkers. So it's a matter of an email or a call to you, Patrick, saying, sure. I've got a Mrs. So-and-so in charge. Can you go and see her tomorrow morning? Here are her details. Here are the rough backgrounds to the case, and they're actually receiving and pushing out all the information and administering the whole division. So that's a really quite a thorough job, and in the doing of all of that, what they learn, and you're quite right, what we all learn is vast amounts of knowledge, because you've got then to go out and seek the information from wherever. So you might be visiting someone who is a retired Royal Engineer, let's say.
Sure.
So you can go to the Royal Engineers Association and find information there if you want to get funding from the regimental source. But you might also find that the person perhaps did a bit of service in the army and then they moved on and worked in, let's say, the motor trade for many years. So the motor Manufacturers Association have their own sort of, you know, funds and unions as well where you can possibly go for funding. And then they may have developed perhaps a condition, Parkinson's or MS or something, in later years. So you can go to the Parkinson's or MS Society to try and get funding from there. And the Royal British Legion will always top up as well when we're searching for funds to get that missing link finally in the whole case. Because sometimes you might be looking for thousands of pounds.
So you're bringing lots of different things together in these cases, usually.
Lots of things. It's been made hugely easier by the internet because you can do a lot more research online or send forms electronically and that sort of thing. I mean, in the past, and when I started almost 20 years ago with SAFA, it was all photocopying, sending things out in envelopes, you know, getting letters back in 3 weeks' time and all of this. It was really as quickly as we could do it, but it was a much less speedy operation than now. Whereas now all the regimental associations and the Air Force Association and the Royal Naval Benevolent Trust all have electronic communication, and so it can be really, really quickly, hopefully, the problem solved really quickly.
You mentioned the internet there, and I've just looked at the SAFA website, and there is a specific area for volunteers, how people can get involved. And I noticed on there you've got ex-service volunteers, people who've been in the forces. Also, you've got service, you know, people who are already within the armed forces who are also volunteering. It's a good way to find out about an organisation by looking at their website.
It's a very good website, actually. It's been recently revamped, and it covers all the work that SAFA does, which is, it's such a large charity that I could be in danger of banging on because there are so many areas that we cover. But I guess the one that I'm most au fait with is at county level with volunteers working on the ground, visiting Mrs. Bloggs in so-and-so road yard and trying to solve her problem. But we're just one part of the larger charity.
It sounds a really interesting organisation. We'll come back and talk a bit more in a moment, Pauline. But first of all, Eddie's going to give us a bit of music.
Well, that's right, and our first bit of music today is by Warren Zevon, and the track is called For My Next Trick, I'll Need a Volunteer.
The programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as Ten Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
We're back with Pauline Holmshaw talking about the Armed Forces charity SAFR. Now Pauline, we talked about some of the work you do, the casework and those kind of issues. I know also there's a lot of fundraising and you personally are very much involved in publicity. How much of your time does it involve being with SAFR?
It's not easy to say on a regular basis because there are times of the year when it's much, much busier than other times. It's interesting because apart from the specific fundraising events, which entail you in a lot of time, and for example, this coming weekend, we've got an all-day event on Sunday, and I'm setting all of that up on Saturday and preparing for it on Friday. So that's a quite sort of busy and intense time of physical activity. And I have already done the advertising and press releases and everything ahead of that. Monday morning it's all over. So that's a busy period of time.
Yes.
The autumn is always a very busy time as well. We have our training days, lots of meetings, planning for next year, that kind of thing. But suddenly you'll find December is quiet, so it really depends. And from a casework point of view, the caseload really, really varies. We're finding these days with our volunteer caseworkers that the casework numbers are dropping a little bit nationally, but the cases we are getting are becoming much more complicated. because people have larger problems these days. I mean, the very first case I ever did with SAFA was an electricity bill that a dear old chap had overrun on, and he needed £100 to get out of the debt situation and get on balance again. Now you might find a case that might involve you in weeks of work where a family is in huge, say, multiple debt, because that is the biggest part of casework, and the CAB would concur with that as well, sadly. But you also might find that perhaps that family is in real need of something domestic in the house. You might find that they haven't had a holiday for ages, or that illness has kicked in, so somebody is a carer and they're not getting the benefits they need to. So it suddenly becomes a really much larger case than just a what appeared at the first. It's the pyramid thing.
Sure. And why do you think things have become more complex recently?
Our lives have, haven't they? Don't you think? I think it's because everything we do now and everything we appear to be involved in is just so much more complicated than in past years. We're all running around busy, 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 aren't we? And it didn't sort of used to feel like it was like that. And so I think it's just a sign of the times, in a sense.
I mean, it's interesting because you've been involved with SAFA for 20 years, and obviously in that time society's changed. But I'd imagine also because of the nature of the conflicts the armed forces are now involved with, the nature of the armed forces presumably has changed in that time as well.
It's become very much leaner, more professional, but the awareness from the public towards our armed forces, because of obviously Iraq and Afghanistan, has heightened people's awareness of all military charities, and obviously there are new charities that have sprung up all over the place. With SAFA, what we pride ourselves on being is a tri-service charity. We don't have any, you know, just army, just we help everyone and their dependents, and we've been doing it for 125 years, which is a great deal longer than all the rest of them.
Yeah, and one of the things that is very clear is that you do some really great work for these people. But also, I'd imagine, as volunteers, people who volunteer probably get a lot out of it as well, in terms of new skills, in terms of presumably the social side. I mean, what do you see as the main benefits to the volunteer of volunteering?
When I described how a case might work, and where you start with the family or the client, and you start from the beginning, and you can work through that case, sometimes really complicated, and eventually wind up with the solution, and you can go back to that client and say, here we are, here's this solved, then the satisfaction you get from that is really very hard to quantify. It's fantastic. And I used to feel a bit guilty about feeling so good about achieving stuff, you know, and then I have got that in proportion now, and I think, no, that's part of why you do it. And surely, without trying to sound too backpatting, as it were, I think that's really got to be why volunteers work. You've got to use volunteers wisely, but you've also got to praise them and value them. Because without volunteers, well, certainly SAFA would fall down. We're, you know, 7,000 in the UK, we would not be able to work.
Well, that's right. And I think, you know, a lot of people do volunteer. They do it in many small ways. It could be just someone going into a community centre and making tea for the day,
sure,
for example.
Yeah.
But they're doing a lot for that organisation. Then at the other end of the scale, you've got people who are trustees of various charities, taking on a lot, almost the responsibilities of managing that organisation. But they're still doing it on a voluntary capacity.
Completely.
But it's different from having a job. Because at least with a job, you get a contract of employment and
you get a paycheck.
You know, and you get a paycheck, yeah.
Yes.
You've got all this and money too. But with volunteering, it's so totally different. Mm. It's something I always sort of bang on about. People can easily volunteer, but also they can easily de-volunteer. And it's sort of managing the hopes and aspirations of that volunteer is so important.
Mm. It's quite a different way of dealing with people from, I suppose, straightforward employees. But certainly we find in Somerset that our volunteer numbers have remained fairly constant. And we don't, although the website on the volunteer section might welcome service, ex-service people, which is completely true, you don't have to have any military background or connection to be involved, because this is work that involves people. Not just military people. The wives and children of serving chaps, for example, are not soldiers. It's just people. So we're helping everyone. And I think We have a real range of people who've done many different sorts of jobs, civil servants, teachers, secretarial people, and people like me with a very sort of mishmashy background of all sorts, but not specifically military.
And if people want to volunteer for SAFA, first of all, what kind of roles are there available to people? We've talked about caseworking and publicity, but what other kind of things can people do?
Certainly in county structures, treasurers are like gold dust, and you need to find and nurture nice people who will do the money side of life. Publicity and fundraising, which in my opinion always go together, that's quite a hard one because people don't like, for example, standing on the street shaking cans, or I absolutely don't mind that. So it's okay here for the moment, but you know, people are uncomfortable with doing that. So if you do find someone who expresses an interest in fundraising, you grab them too.
Yeah.
Also, what we haven't enough of are people who have a little bit of time after we have done our cases and finished and done and dusted, that's fine, but people perhaps just to go back and sit down from time to time with that client and have a cup of tea and just keep contact with them. And this is where our helpers come in, people who perhaps used to do casework but now just really don't want to do casework any longer, a little bit too much commitment, but they're fine to go and do a little bit of visiting and just chatting and keeping that connection with that old soldier or that old soldier's wife. And that's where we're a little bit thin on the ground, and I think probably many charities are. It would be lovely to have lots and lots of people prepared to do that.
And I can imagine, because it's keeping that emotional connection, isn't it, which people value so strongly. So, Pauline, on a practical side, if people do want to get involved, where do they go for more information?
The simplest and easiest method, Patrick, is to go to our national website, which is safa.org.uk. And just to remind listeners that SAFA is the Soldiers, Sailors and Airmen's Families Association, so that's S-S-A-F-A. There, follow the links which direct you to do you want to get involved, and you can look in your county area, and there will be a phone number there for you to contact, or an email. So that's the simplest way. Or if anyone's listening locally and wants to ring my number, that's very, very good news too. That's 01984 624 564.
Okay, thanks, Pauline. And thanks for coming in and taking the time with us this morning. We wish you all the best with your work with SAFA.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That was Pauline Holmshaw there telling us about her voluntary work with SAFA, the Armed Forces charity. Now, we're going to be back in a moment discussing this further with our guest today, who is Lisa Wyatt-Jones from the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development. But in the meantime, we've got some music. It's the Village People with YMCA.
I'm sure you will find many ways to have a good time. Fun to stay at the YMCA. Fun to stay at the YMCA. They have everything for your men to enjoy. You can hang out with all the boys. It's fun to stay at the YMCA. Fun to stay at the YMCA.
This programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as TEM Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
That's the Village People with YMCA. And welcome back to Somerset Is Go. And today's topic is volunteering, using your skills to serve. We've been joined in the studio by Lisa Wyatt-Jones from the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development. Welcome, Lisa.
Hello, Patrick. Hello, Eddie.
Well, it was interesting to listen to the interview with Pauline Holmshaw there from SAFA, talking to us about the Armed Forces charity, the good that they do for ex-members of the forces and their families, but also what she and her fellow volunteers got out of it, which was obviously immense fulfilment and satisfaction. Now, Lisa, you, in your capacity as head of the CIPD in the West of England, represent the interest of employers very much. And I know that you were saying to us that employers regard volunteering as a very positive thing in potential recruits.
Yes, employers do support staff who volunteer. Again, it's great for their experience. It shows that they add extra value and they're motivated. And particularly, I've been working with Barrett Developments recently, and they have been supporting their graduates to take on voluntary work. In fact, it's part of their whole rotation scheme for their graduates. So they are trying to support the communities, and they're using their graduates and the rest of their staff to make sure that they go out there and they help the communities and build a better, stronger community.
And it doesn't surprise me that this is so respected, because we listened to what Pauline was saying, and she was talking about all the different skills she'd learnt and how many different skills people learn working for SAFRA. I mean, anything from administration to people skills to working in a team. And I can imagine that voluntary work in a way gives you just as much, if not perhaps more, in your background than it does to work in a regular job.
I definitely agree. Actually, working with volunteers or even as a volunteer is quite demanding, and if you try and manage volunteers, you take on a role as a team leader, that can be very difficult because people are there because they want to, and therefore they can walk away at any time. So actually being able to manage and motivate and support volunteers to actually be able to do what you need them to do is very challenging.
So it takes in many ways more leadership skills than a regular management position in a normal job would.
Definitely, much more persuasion and negotiation and getting people on board, making sure everybody has the same goals in mind and is motivated to be able to achieve that.
And I know, Lisa, that you do a lot of work voluntarily in your capacity as head of the CIPD in this part of the country. I mean, that involves leading a very big team, doesn't it, and organising very big events.
Yes, we annually now run a conference, which I support, and we have been running up to about 60 events a year, and it's all run by volunteers, and they negotiate and arrange events, get support, sponsorship, to be able to support the members of the CIPD. And I've also helped with Macmillan Cancer Research for a number of years, my family supporting that, so helping out on coffee mornings and cream teas. I've done my stint of that. And recently, again, we've been supporting, as the CIPD, St Margaret's Hospice. So every time we have a major event, we ask them to come along and they do a raffle, and that's very well supported by our members.
Okay, so a wide variety of experience there, both within your professional capacity, in a sense, as a human resources person with the CIPD, but also more generally in what's known as the third sector, the charitable sector. Now, I mean, Eddie, another person, does a lot of volunteer work, but yours is more in the direction of politics, isn't it, Eddie?
Well, yeah, I'm a district councillor for Taunton Deane, and it's only something I've been doing in the last year or so. I became a district councillor because people kept on asking me to do it, and I thought, right, well, they can obviously see something in me that I couldn't personally see myself. But I went into it, and I actually won the election, and I actually got more votes and double what the other two parties got together. So there must have been quite a lot of people out there who either liked what I was saying that I was hopefully going to do as a district councillor. You know, so I now represent the people of Wiverliscombe and West Dean on Taunton Deane's council. And so I regularly go into Taunton Deane and talk on behalf of the local residents about matters that might affect them in Taunton Deane.
And I can imagine that on top of how valuable that is for the people in Wiverliscombe, it's also opened new doors for you or new experiences for you.
Well, it has, yeah. When I was voted in, I never have ever considered myself to be a politician. Now, this is probably not the best of times to be a politician, but I don't consider myself to be a politician, I'm just someone who will speak up for the local community. But I've also learned that you can't say yes to everyone, so that's probably where the politician in you comes, because there's got to be some people that you're going to disappoint. Otherwise, I think I would just go completely crazy trying to say yes to everyone.
And I guess that's a new skill, isn't it? I mean, in the sense, being able to negotiate or being able to get a message across in a way that people will find acceptable, even when you're telling them something they don't necessarily want to hear.
That's right. And in many respects, you are articulating to other councillors the views and the interests of the people in your local area. I mean, one thing which I think was a major victory for myself was that I prevented the putting of car parking charges on our car parks here in Wiverliscombe. And it was one of those sort of budget saving things where, you know, money is tight, and so Taunton Deane were looking for areas where they could gain some form of money. And I was very clear that I said that I'm the one that walks around Wiverliscombe. I'm the one who's got to confront the people who voted for me. And if you put car parking charges, I don't think it's a good idea anyway, because that would be very counterproductive from the point of view of local businesses. Because human nature being what it is, people will try to avoid paying for anything. And you know, even if it's just a nominal charge, people would then think, oh, well, I might as well go to a local supermarket where I can get free parking, whatever. Or they would try to park in areas of the town where it's free, which would have put pressure on the local inhabitants who haven't got car parking spaces themselves. And it was something I stuck to my guns, and we haven't got car parking charges here in Wiverliscombe, even though people within the Taunton Deane executive were ringing me up at home saying, well, what have you got against this, etc. But I said, at the end of the day, I'm the one who's got to face the local people. You know, so that's a major victory as far as I'm concerned.
And making a practical difference to the community, and particularly the shops here, I should imagine, Eddie.
That's right, and I also sit on the business group, I sit on the parish council, and I go to other parish councils and I listen to what local residents are saying about how their local areas are run. And I think that's what local politics is about.
Oh, well, of course, the other thing to say is that we are on a voluntary radio station, aren't we? 10 Radio run by volunteers almost exclusively.
Well, yes, there's only one paid member of staff on 10 Radio, and they only work one day a week. The rest of 10 Radio is put together by presenters doing their own programmes, people sitting on reception area answering the telephones. I mean, some people get up at 6 o'clock in the morning in order to do a show at 7 o'clock, some people even earlier. We've also got links with BBC Radio in Taunton and that sort of thing. And we've created a brilliant community initiative here in Wiverliscombe, which broadcasts to everyone around the local area, including people in Taunton and Wellington. And we also know that we've got a lot of listeners who listen in other parts of the world. We regularly get emails from Southern California, from Berlin, from New Zealand. And that's all put together by volunteers.
And, you know, as a volunteer, I think one of the great things is the enjoyment of it, but also the skills you learn. I mean, you have to learn to put a show together, you have to learn to be fairly creative, you have to learn to how you're going to interact with the guests and all sorts of things. We'll talk about 10 Radio plenty more over the course of the next few shows, I expect, Eddie. And in the meantime, shall we have some music?
That's right. And one thing about 10 Radio, it has a quite unique playlist. And this is an old song. It's by Roy Wright and Who Will Volunteer?
A brand new star. Who'll make me feel that someone cares for me? Who'll take away all this misery?
This programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as TEM Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.
Welcome back to Somerset Is Go, and today's subject is volunteering, using your skills to serve. I'm Patrick Jordan, and I've got Eddie Gaines with me, and our guest today is Lisa Wyatt-Jones from the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development. Now, Lisa, one of the things that came out of our discussion was the whole issue of transferable skills, things you can learn as a volunteer that are then useful to transfer into the workplace. Now, what kinds of skills do you find that volunteers bring to their employer?
They can bring skills like customer services and organisational skills. But also, if they're leading a team of volunteers, then it'll be sort of team working, managing, supervising, supporting, developing, mentoring and training volunteers, because quite often they need to be trained in that particular skill you need. So there's a whole range of areas that people will be able to bring from their volunteering work. So it's very much, I mean, just because it's volunteering doesn't mean it's any less business focused than any organisation, and any sort of less target driven. And there'll be goals set, people will have things that they need to achieve. Certainly when you're volunteering, you're meeting someone's expectation. In fact, in many ways, people are more motivated to go out of the way to actually try and do the work that's required.
I'd imagine it's something which, in many cases, people are very, very passionate about, isn't it? What the causes they're volunteering for. And I mean, one of the things that strikes me about it is that you can actually end up with quite a lot of responsibility at a fairly young age as a volunteer, that you might have to work your way a long way up the corporate ladder for until you got that same kind of responsibility in the job market.
Yes, and that's something I've certainly experienced, again, having done some interviews recently of graduates. There's a number of graduates who have actually gained a lot of managerial experience from the volunteering work that they've done and been put in quite demanding positions, having to organise events, manage teams of volunteers, trying to market and actually sell products. So I think you can gain a huge amount of experience there. And also St Margaret's Hospice, for example, I mean, they just wouldn't be able to function without the amount of volunteers that they have.
And that's a good point. I mean, we're looking at various different local communities, and it's incredibly important how some of these voluntary organisations are to the community. Eddie was talking earlier about WiviLink, the transport organisation, and that has a tremendous role to play here, doesn't it, Eddie?
That's right. WiviLink is a community transport system. It relies on volunteer drivers to man the vehicles. Again, it's a small organisation. It's got a couple of paid staff. In fact, their base is at Wiverscum House here in Wiverscum. So there's a manager who runs Wiverscum House, but it's also another paid member of staff who's taking the bookings and making sure that the service is in the right place at the right time and that there are drivers to drive the vehicles. It gets a lot of support from people like the local Rotary, local Garrard supports Wiverscum, WiviLink, but it cannot run if it hasn't got volunteer drivers or people to help run Wiverscum House.
And it's very, very important that. I mean, you know, volunteers are so important to so many communities and so many individuals. We've obviously heard Pauline telling us about SAFA and the huge role they play for the welfare of the armed services and people in that community. Without them, you can imagine their people would really be struggling to get their problems sorted out.
WiviLink, helps older people or people who haven't got access to their own vehicles to get out and about, to maybe just go shopping or visit a friend. They're frequently taking people around the 10 parishes. It works Monday to Friday through the day, and it's actually allowing people to get out of their house and actually do something productive.
Another side of volunteering that's quite beneficial, I think, is that it can teach you entrepreneurial skills. For example, a friend of mine is a seller for Tradecraft, the Fair Trade organisation. So she has to buy the kind of products she believes will sell, find the venues where she thinks she'll be able to sell them, and I suppose develop sales technique, accounts, all those kind of things that you might actually need to run a small business.
Yes, definitely. I think when you decide to go out on your own, you don't just do the profession that you're working in. You suddenly have a business that you have to run. So you are promoting yourself. You're marketing, you're actually doing your finances, your bookkeeping, you're ensuring that your website is up to date, that all the literature is up to date, you're actually keeping up to date yourself. There is only you in your business. So a lot of entrepreneurs or small businesses tend to use local community agencies, a bit like the Chamber of Commerce or local networking groups, 4M, BNI, SWIRE for women. There's a whole range of networks out there that can help support people who want to go into business on their own, but also make sure that they're not just on their own, sat in an office trying to plug away on their own, rather than give them some kind of community and support there.
And I can imagine that's very important, because, you know, psychologically, if you're on your own, you know, things aren't going your way, or if you want advice, you can feel quite isolated. And I'd imagine that having the experience of doing that kind of entrepreneurial stuff in a charity beforehand must give people a level of self-confidence that perhaps they wouldn't otherwise have.
I think so. Having to get up and support the charity, sell the charity, gives you the confidence to be able to then promote yourself. Again, if you go out to places like BNI or 4N, you're getting up in the morning early, going there for a breakfast meeting and having to pitch yourself every time you go there, sell what it is that you do and say who you're looking for, who your customers are, and ask them to try and help you find them.
And another side of charity, which I think is a big side, or not so much charity but volunteering generally, is its community aspect. I mean, one thing I've noticed with 10 Radio is that 10 Radio has created its own community around it. I mean, not only the people who work voluntarily at the station, but also people who might hear us and talking about a particular topic or phone in to discuss something, or people who are going to get their events promoted on our shows. And if that was taken out of the town, it would actually leave quite a big gap, wouldn't it, Eddie?
Yeah, that's right. 10 Radio got a community radio license because it could show that there'd be a social gain by the radio being there. And the fact that organisations of all types can advertise their events, people from the scout group can come in and advertise what they're doing, the local a dramatic group can come in and be interviewed on, say, the community show. I mean, this sort of raises the profile of a lot of other things that are happening all around with Liscombe and the 10 parishes area. And running 10 Radio, we now got a board of directors, so we've got to do everything that a business would do. We've got to compile our annual report. We've got a treasurer who pays the bills. We've got people collecting sponsorship money from businesses, and we've also got things like Friends of 10 Radio. So if people like what they hear, they can always donate to 10 Radio. So it's a complete industry is all been built up around 10 Radio from something which is fundamentally inspired as a voluntary thing.
Now, 10 Radio is obviously an example of volunteering on a local level, although of course we do transmit internationally over the web, as we always tell everybody, Eddie. There are also sort of more national level things you can volunteer at. I mean, for example, a friend of mine is a special constable in the police force. And I mean, that to me is an amazing job, because they have to do this on top of their full-time work. They don't get paid for it, but even so, she's absolutely engrossed in it. Committed, exactly. That's the word I was groping for already. She's now gone into the police full-time. And it was essentially that volunteering that helped her to get that permanent job, because of course it was 100% relevant to what she wanted to do.
I think it's important to take the opportunity to volunteer, to learn new skills, and certainly that your friend would have been able to be in a brilliant position to actually take up a full-time post, having had that full experience.
Okay, great.
And for a lot of people, it is the foot in the door, isn't it? For if someone wants to get involved with it or become a policeman, then being a special is a good way to start it.
And I suppose you've got parallels in the armed forces, haven't you, with things like the Territorial Army, although, strictly speaking, I suppose, although they're not really volunteers in the sense that they get paid. But nevertheless, it is, you know, a part-time way into something which may later become a full-time job.
I mean, and you've also got St John Ambulance, for example. Well, I mean, people couldn't organise sporting event basis without the support of the St John Ambulance, and also the Red Cross as well. I mean, you know, there's again is another organisation that trains people about first aid in the home, first aid in the workplace, And again, these organisations are run on a voluntary basis. Of course, we've got the air ambulances, which are responding to accidents in rather remote places or even on motorways. That's a charitable organisation that is run by volunteers.
Yeah, and again, it's a huge amount of fundraising goes into that as well, doesn't it? Which is a very, very good skill to have. And it's interesting when we talked about the third sector. I mean, people think of the third sector, okay, it's charity, but actually it's an incredibly competitive world. I mean, trying to, because the charities are essentially competing against each other to get donations. And often that competition is more fierce than even corporates would be, particularly, you know, in a time of recession when people are probably giving less. So again, you've got all the same factors going on, which are going to stand you in very good stead when you go to full-time work.
And I also think, having again been to St Margaret's Hospice Trust meeting, and they're also quite hard hit by any major disasters worldwide, because when you have crises like Haiti, people put all their extra cash into that, and also then that hits the local charities. So they have to work even harder to be able to sort of promote themselves and to continue to work and raise the funds that they need.
Okay, well, we're going to go to our final piece of music now, and then we'll come back and talk some more about working in the voluntary sector. And what have you got lined up for us this time, Eddie?
Well, this is, the title is Be a Volunteer, and it's by someone called Lloyd Mabry.
Be a volunteer, do your very best. Be a volunteer, there's problems to address. Be a volunteer, show others the way. Be a volunteer, your own special way. You can make a difference with a helping hand. You don't need $1 million or a rock and roll band. Just a little time is all you need to give. Find yourself a purpose to make the world a better place to live. Be a volunteer with that glowing smile. Be a volunteer, walk that extra mile. Be a volunteer with love from deep within. Be a volunteer, it's you that really wins. You can make a difference with a helping hand. You don't need $1 million or a rock and roll band. Just a little time is all you need to give. Find yourself a purpose and make the world a better place to
Welcome back to Somerset Is Go with me, Patrick Jordan, Eddie Gaines, and our guest, Lisa Wyatt-Jones. Today's show is entitled Volunteering, Using Your Skills to Serve. And we've been emphasising both the value to the community, but also to you in volunteering, in terms of developing skills, in terms of impressing employers, and all those kind of issues. Now, Lisa made the very important point while that record was going, that in a sense, if you haven't got a job, why not volunteer? It's surely the best thing to do, Lisa.
Definitely. I mean, there's nothing worse than not having a purpose, not getting up and doing something. So if you are unemployed or you're in between work, then why not volunteer? Why not use your time productively to get extra training, to get the skills, to be in a much stronger position when a piece of work does come along? You'll be a much better candidate. You'll have all of this extra training and understanding, and you may well enjoy it. You'll get a lot back out of it.
Now, Eddie, you mentioned that you worked for many years in the Job Centre as a manager there, and that you were actually quite impressed by the volunteering that many of the people did.
That's right. In previous recessions, it never failed to amaze me what people who are unemployed, registered as unemployed, actually did with their spare time, whether it be organising a local football team, even a league basis. And of course, if someone said to me, right, well, all I haven't got any skills and whatever, I said, well, what do you actually do? What do you do with all that, that so-called time you've got available? And I said, well, I organise a football team. I said, right, okay. And so you deal with prima donnas and whatever who always want to play and whatever. Oh yeah, I suppose I do a bit of that. I organise, make sure people are in the right place, the right time. I deal with the discipline side of things. When people get a yellow card or something like that. Well, yeah. So you've got a lot of managerial skills then. Oh, well, if you put it that way, then yeah, I suppose I've gained a lot of managerial skills. The thing about if you're looking for work and claiming benefit, you can actually do as much volunteering as you actually want. All you've got to do is also incorporate some job search at the same time. And the rules for claiming job seekers allowance actually support someone who might want to do some volunteering. The other side of the coin is you've also got to be able to leave that voluntary capacity at very short notice as a volunteer. So if you can't leave that thing for about a month or so, well then you will fall foul of the rules. If you are volunteering, just tell your job centre staff that's what you're doing, and then you can complete another form, and they'll be too happy to see you doing something productively with your time.
Now, if people are interested in volunteering, have you got any suggestions as to where they might go to find some information?
The main website for the UK is directgov.uk. And there's a whole section on volunteering there about how to find a volunteering opportunity, even to setting up a volunteer scheme at work, for example. You might be in work. Often employers, as we've already said, we're often looking for their staff to widen their skills by doing other things.
Now, we've been talking about some really great volunteering opportunities and the organisations that you can get in touch with to do that. But also, you can volunteer on a much more informal basis, can't you? For example, if you have an elderly neighbour whose garden needs clearing, you could just take it upon yourself to go around and help out.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who support their community by helping each other out, help their neighbours out, help their elderly relatives out even. Again, I've just had the example from one of the interviewees who went round to his elderly neighbour who really wanted their house done up, and he had the time in his summer holiday and he got his friends round and he taught them the skills they needed to, and they completely refurbished her home, and they did it for her just at the cost of the materials. They didn't charge for the labour and they managed to make her very happy.
Yeah, and a similar one, where I live in Somerset in Butley, a little village called Butley, we did some, I remember this when I was a teenager, there was a guy there who just took it upon himself to help build a pavilion on our playing field, which would serve as a changing room, and he simply organised a bunch of us. I was a teenager, just finished my A-level, so I was kind of at a loose end over the summer, and I joined in, and by 2 or 3 weeks' time we had this pavilion up, still there to this day, and it makes a huge difference to the playing field. So you didn't need an organisation to do that, although obviously there are massive advantages to of going through organisations, but you can just do things off your own bat.
Well, I've just looked at the DirectGov website, and actually they're now promoting volunteering for the Olympics in 2012, and they're actually doing that recruitment now, and they say they're going to need 70,000 volunteers from across the UK to support the Olympics in 2012, but they're actually doing that recruitment now.
And I can imagine that would be something very exciting to get involved with, wouldn't it? Up there with all the athletes. And the good thing is there's also going to be quite a few events here in Somerset. Although they call it the London Games, it's actually going to come here as well, isn't it?
Yeah, in Weymouth.
That's right, for the sailing.
That's right. The type of things that they're advertising is first aid and medical services, stewarding, interpreting, security administration, ticketing, even doping control.
Wow, so yeah, quite a lot of varied things there, Eddie.
Yes.
But of course it's not just the third sector in a way that volunteering is becoming a big thing. I mean, it's actually affecting the commercial world now, isn't it? I know, for example, that some companies are expecting graduates to come and work for free for a while just to pick up skills.
Yes, I think the kind of Americanism of internships has certainly caught on over here. So employers are really expecting if an employee really wants the job, wants to learn about it, they'll put themselves out and they will work for free. They'll actually do this internship with them and be able to take the training, take the experience, and obviously be in a much stronger position for going for a post when a position actually comes up.
And I think also JobCentre Plus have got their own scheme called a work trial, where you can work for an employer. It's got to be arranged by the job centre through negotiation with the employer, and it's no more than 3 weeks. But the work trial could only just be one day, and that just be maybe enough to prove to that potential employer that you can get to work. You know, that you can actually perform duties in the workplace. And I always think the work trials there's a lot of psychology going on there, that if you did a work trial for about a week with the employer, then the decision maker, the boss might go to the fellow workers and say, well how's Jimmy getting on, or how's Julie getting on? And if the workers say, actually she's picked up the work very well, I mean, you know, we really like her, well, it's almost like you've got the job already. You don't even have to have the interview.
Yeah, and I think the other side of that, of course, is it gives the potential employee the possibility to see if they like the job they're
That's right,
potentially applying
because,
for.
Because if you don't like that job, then you can just leave the work trial. I used to really joke, well, just don't leave people hanging up a ladder or anything like that. But there are literally no questions asked if you don't like that particular work trial.
I think it's important that you realise it is a two-way process, because, again, as you said, you can go along into a piece of work or into a workplace and think, actually, this just isn't for me. You don't like the environment, you don't gel with the people, the work isn't very interesting, or it's too technical or not technical enough. And so actually being able to test it out to see first whether it's actually what you really want to do is really important and a great opportunity to take.
Okay, well, Lisa, we really appreciate you coming to join with us this afternoon. Lisa, as we said, is head of the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development in the West. Lisa, how do we get in touch with you or with the CIPD if we want more information?
You can get in touch with the CIPD on their website, which is www.cipd.co.uk. If you go onto that site, you can get through to the West of England branch to find out what events and what's going on in the area. That is mainly aimed at members, although we would welcome anyone who'd like to come along to an event. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can go onto my website, which is www.white-jones.com.
And we also want to thank Pauline for coming in earlier to tell us about SAFA, the Armed Forces Charity.
And if you want to volunteer or work with 10 Radio, you just need to give us a ring on 01984 624 137 or send an email to info@10radio.org. If you're interested in becoming a volunteer driver with Wivy Link, go into Wivy-Liscombe House in the square in Wivy-Liscombe and speak to Linda, the manager there.
Well, thanks for listening to us today on Somerset Is Go. We look forward to having you back for our next show. And for me and Eddie, it's goodbye.
This programme has been sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council through their Recession Relief Fund. The fund was created to support organisations such as Ten Radio, helping local communities deal with the effects of the economic recession.